you're here. Fellowship sweeter, knowing you're near.
Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Wednesday, November 7th, 2018. Yesterday, I exercised my civic duty by voting. Today, I cast my wholehearted endorsement and vote for Russell Moore, author of The Storm-Tossed Family, How the Cross Reshapes the Home. And we're fortunate to have him on the phone. We've called him in Nashville, Tennessee. Pastor Jason Schiffo and I have read his book, The Storm-Tossed Family, How the Cross Reshapes the Home. And we're so pleased to have Dr. Moore with us. He's the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. The ERLC is the moral and public policy entity of the nation's largest Protestant denomination. The Wall Street Journal has called Moore vigorous, cheerful, and fiercely articulate. And we'll look forward to hearing from you, Dr. Moore, in just a moment. He was named in 2017 to Political Magazine's list of the top 50 influential makers in Washington and has been profiled by such publications as The Washington Post, The New Yorker, and The Weekly Standard. And I'm thinking, Pastor Jason Schiffo, we'll have to get some kind of article or content for our beloved Prime Life Times in the future here, our own little paper. Dr. Moore's book, Onward, Engaging the Culture Without Losing the Gospel, was named Christianity Today's Book of the Year in 2016. He has also written Adopted for Life, The Priority of Adoption for Christian Families and Churches. And also he's written Tempted and Tried, Temptation and the Triumph of Christ. Prior to his election in 2013, Moore served as provost and dean of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisiana, Kentucky, where he also taught theology and ethics. He currently serves as the distinguished professor of Christian ethics at the Southern Seminary and as a visiting professor of ethics in the Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary and New Orleans Baptist Theology Seminary. A native Mississippian, Moore and his wife Maria are the parents of five children. So we're so glad to have you with us this morning and carving out time on this busy post-election day, and also with the various books you've written, the schedules you keep, the research and writings and many projects you're involved in. Thanks for carving out time for us today.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Moore, I had a chance to read your book a couple weeks ago, and boy, I was really intrigued by this, because when I think about all the different things that are going on, and we're at post-election day here, and all the cultural conversations, it's a really challenging time for the family.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, I mean, what as families do we need to hold on to, do we need to let go? Because I know as a dad, and my wife would certainly say as a mom, that it's becoming very confusing, the messages that our kids get, the things that find their way into our homes on a daily basis.
Well, you know, sometimes I think we have the tendency to think things are harder for families now than they would have been before, and I just don't think that's the case. I think that every era, the family is right in the target of spiritual warfare. But those challenges change from time to time. So now there are unique challenges. So, I had to explain to my 7-year-old at the time when he saw a segment in a dentist's office about transgenderism. Hmm. And so I was thinking, I really didn't want to have to explain this at this age to him. That's something that my grandfather would have never had to do. But every era has challenges to the family. It's just a question of whether we see them or not. And so that's one of the reasons why right now I think one of the problems that we have is this sort of simultaneous pull away from family that's in the sort of the cultural moment that we're in of pursue your authenticity and pursue who you are, but also this call to idealize the family, which we can see even just in the pressure that comes in a social media sort of moment for family to be picture perfect in a way that often leads people to despair when they're comparing their families over and against these idealized images that either they see other people putting forward or that they've imagined for themselves. And that leads to a great deal of tension and trauma.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems like we're at a point in the culture, too, where so much is pulling moms and dads' attention away from being attentive to the conversations within the family. My wife just the other day was telling me this. We were talking about it because my daughter had come home with a sheet of paper. They spent an hour in school talking about the Day of the Dead and how you welcome the dead into your home and this whole tradition that happens down in South America. And we had to have a real heart-to-heart conversation and try and correct that. And it was interesting because my wife said to me, I wonder how many people never would have seen this paper come home in the take-home folder.
Yeah, well, I think you're right that there's a tendency toward not giving attention to family. But at the same time, you have this pressure to be hyper-focused. I remember not very long ago, I was sitting in a coffee shop, and I was listening to these women sitting next to me talking about their sons who were all in college at the time. And they were going through about checking in with their son every day and what time each of his classes were. And I remember thinking, my mom, who was a very active and engaged mom, had no idea what my schedule was that first semester of college. You know, so there's a tendency toward neglecting in the things that really matter and then helicoptering in those things that don't. So we feel like we're hyper protective, and yet often we're not nearly protective enough. That's one of the things that tends to happen when I see people who would gasp if their child were allowed to play outside unsupervised, and yet will give that child unsupervised access to the internet. And I think what are you thinking in both directions?
Yeah, so how do you find, where do you see the balance in that? Because I know, I believe, wasn't it Outside Magazine had an article not too long ago about this idea of free-range parenting, where you allow your kids the opportunity to explore.
Yeah.
And you kind of parent, I don't know, I don't want to say from a distance, but with a watchful eye, but allowing them to trip, to make mistakes, to experience things, but also be attentive and be involved in while they're doing that. Where do you see that balance?
I think that's absolutely right. I think that's the sort of model of fathering that we see from God, who is someone who is supervising, of course, every aspect of our lives. And yet, he's someone who, as he says in Deuteronomy, I allowed you to hunger so that you might know that man does not live by bread alone. Mm-hmm. And so there are aspects of life where we only gain competency by trial and error. I saw a study one time, and it resonated with me very deeply because it said that one of the most important things for children is to be able to find their way through some place that they don't know. And I was thinking, well, that's exactly what was formative for me, was being able to tromp through the woods and all of the things that I would do as a child in a way that could teach me how to make my way in life. Mm. Now, you don't do that in a way that just hands children over to something that's going to harm them. But there's an art to being present enough to swoop in and intervene when necessary, but absent enough for children to start getting the confidence, these are the things that I can do.
So how do you navigate that with your son? So I'm going to preface this by we follow some of the things you do on Instagram, but we were sitting on the table at the table one day, and this had to be, I don't know, a number of weeks ago. But a couple of years ago, I took my son to the comic book convention over in Indianapolis. And there was a couple of people who were really suspect of that, saying, you know, I don't know if you really thought this through. You know, comic book convention is not really where Christians should be and blah, blah, blah. So a couple of weeks ago, we were sitting at the kitchen table and my phone was on the table and I got an alert, and it was that you had posted. And my son said, Dad, look. Dr. Moore took his son to the comic book shop. He's so cool. and I just said, you know what, there's this place where we navigate with our kids between the world and with their faith. And so how do you do that? Because you're very forthright, I think, on social media with taking your kids out. You got them trick-or-treating, you got that. And so how do you navigate that? Because there are so many people, I think, where our faith is concerned who would say, no, that's a high fence. You can't do that. No, you shouldn't do that.
Well, I think that different parents, of course, are going to have differently formed consciences. And so I think Romans 14 would apply to a large degree to say if something is a sin against your conscience, then don't violate that. And mm-hmm. so to use the example that Paul uses, if you believe that the eating meat is wrong, then serve your children vegetables. Make sure they get plenty of protein and iron, but serve them vegetables. I'm not going to bind your conscience in that. But our approach is to say we want to teach our children now how to make moral differentiation and decisions. Now, that does not mean that we're going to take them into a place where they're going to be sinning by mm-hmm. being there, or where there's going to be some sort of a temptation that's going to be too much for them. But what I like to do is to show them how the Bible informs the way that I see certain things. And so I had my son with me in New York. I was doing some meetings there and some media things there. And we would be in a lot of places with unbelievers who don't share our understanding of the world at all. I love for him to be in those places. And then afterward, I will say, now, did you hear what so-and-so said? This is why he thinks that and why he believes that. And this is why I don't. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the moments where you can teach through. There's a reason why we believe the things that we believe. Because I think a lot of times you have Christian kids who grow up thinking, well, of course, everything that we believe is just the way that it's supposed to be. And people who don't are just stupid or evil. And then when they actually encounter those people or they encounter those ideas and they find out, well, wait, these aren't stupid people. These aren't stupid arguments mm-hmm. and these aren't evil people. They have good intentions behind it. Then they're shattered. And that's typically what I see taking place, is that you have people who just don't know how to make sense of something that the Bible does make sense of, that mm-hmm. everybody's made in the image of God. And so everybody's got a way of reasoning and rationalizing what it is that they're doing. And that's how sin works for all of us, is a way that is often deeply deceptive to us. So I try to find those teaching opportunities wherever I can.
And I think that's wise, because I think we need to show our kids that the Bible talks about all things, not just some things, so often I think I could just interject my personal opinion about something and not always say, well, this is also why I believe this, and have a great teaching moment for my son or my daughter.
Yeah, and to what I try to do is to explain why people who disagree with me on whatever the particular issue is, in a way that would be fair to them. It's not a caricature. So that if that person were sitting here with me, would be able to say, yes, I agree with the way that you're framing this, in order to say, here are the reasons why I don't believe that. Because if you simply say, oh, well, atheists are just stupid, or Wiccans are evil, or what have you, and simply dismiss it or give a caricature, then you're going to end up with eventually children saying, well, did my parents or did my teachers or whoever was involved in my life, did they even really understand this? Mm-hmm. They really even know it? And so I think being as honest and forthright as possible, and being age appropriate, mm-hmm. but as honest and forthright as possible while going through, and also showing, I think sometimes kids are in situations where their parents are so defensive. Something is brought up that they don't agree with, and the parents react with this sense of awkward, mild panic, that it gives a vision to the children that somehow the parents aren't confident enough in Christianity. Where if we believe what we believe, that Jesus is alive and the devil is raging around here for a little while, but the time is short, then we ought to be the people who are the most confident. Yeah. Of all, and the people who aren't shocked or surprised that there are people who think we're crazy, we're not offended by that. We understand that. I think that's important.
In case you just tuned in, we have Dr. Russell Moore on the phone with us. We're calling him from Nashville, and he's the author of the recently released The Storm-Tossed Family, How the Cross Reshapes the Home. And I wanted to ask Dr. Moore, there's a quote, "The only safe harbor for a storm-tossed family is a nail-scarred home." Talk about that.
Well, I think that sometimes Christians assume that what life ought to be is tranquility. And that's especially true when we think about family. Because I think sometimes we either come up with a kind of prosperity gospel that says, well, if I believe Jesus enough, then my family situation is going to be exactly what I think it should be. Or we kind of have this this sort of technocratic view that if I just follow these steps toward, you know, a good relationship with my parents or good parenting or a good marriage, then that's going to work itself out like a recipe. But that doesn't take into account what's really going on in family life, which is spiritual warfare. And so you are always, at every moment, going to be in a family crisis, if you define crisis the right way, as a turning point where things could go one way or the other. And so family ought to reveal to us how dependent we are upon God. And so if you think of that image of storm, when you think of the storm that is threatening to destroy the boat on the Sea of Galilee in the Gospels, the way that's resolved is by crying out to Jesus. He's the one who's able to say, "Peace, be still." Mm-hmm. And I think that our family situations ultimately get us there. All of us, if we actually know what's going on. And so there's that famous quote that has become almost a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. It's because it's true, that says you're only as happy as your least happy child for parents. Well, there's a sense in which that's true not just for parents. That's true for anyone within a family. When someone in the family is hurting, your mother has just lost her husband and she's grieving, or you have that child who failed in the college program that he was hoping to succeed in, or you just fill in whatever, the grandchild who reveals that there's a substance abuse problem. I mean, there eventually comes a point where all of us say, okay, we can't micromanage this on our own, and this is revealing to us that we're really out in some uncharted waters here. Mm-hmm. And I think that the response to that is not to drive us to just throw our hands up, but to drive us toward a sense of dependency upon God, and to see it's not just our families but our entire lives that we have to entrust to Him.
Yeah, and what's interesting I see is in a lot of places, faith organizations have done the opposite. Instead of clinging to God's Word and clinging to the cross, they seem to be trying to marry those things with cultural ideology, which is really, it's not turning out well, I don't think.
No.
So what do you think, in our remaining couple minutes that we have, what's the way forward? I mean, when I look at what's happening in culture, I mean, I see it affecting our communities. I see it affecting our cities. I mean, I watched the last Southern Baptist Convention. I watched the last Methodist General Assembly that they had. And I'm watching the culture just gnawing at our denominations also, and our local churches. I mean, as a pastor, I'm dealing with issues that, gosh, when I sit down with older pastors, they go, "Well, you know, I mean, I don't really ever had to deal with that one." I mean, I had to deal with some other things, but not this, and not in such a prevalent way. And then ultimately how that seeps into our family. So what is the way forward for us as a people of faith?
Well, I think it is to realize there are actually was an Orthodox priest who was telling me one time about, he, of course, in their tradition, they hear confessions. And he said that most of the confessions that he was hearing would not have been technologically possible when he started out in ministry. And I think that's for all of us who are involved in counseling people, that rings true. There are a lot of things that would not have been technologically possible. Doesn't mean they're new things. It means that they're things that have been, that they've either been weaponized in terms of how widespread they can be, I think pornography through the internet, or they're things that are able to be subtler in the way that they work right now. So, again, I think every generation has its challenges where things are obvious or not obvious. So in a previous generation, the baby boomer generation, for instance, among evangelical Christians, sexuality issues in terms of homosexuality and so forth, those were very clear morally, but divorce was not. The way the scripture speaks about the divorce culture, that was obscured. You come to a younger generation, and often, not in every case, but often that's reversed. And so you can talk about divorce and the damage that it does, but you don't talk about sexuality issues, because those would be controversial. I think every generation has those. I think the main thing we have to do is to say, what are the things that we're not paying attention to right now? What are the things that are not being debated on Facebook right now?
So what
either
do you think
because,
those are?
We just don't see them coming toward us, or because we've so accommodated ourselves to them that we don't even notice them. Those are the things that are really the most dangerous.
And so would those be the points that you line out in the chapters in your book, The Storm-Tossed Family?
Yes. So everything from divorce to how to relate to one another in marriage, to how to be a single Christian in a really, really sexually charged world, all the way over to how do we deal with aging parents, when there are a lot of Christians that are trying to think through, how do I obey God and honor father and mother? What does that mean for how I deal with nursing home care or those sorts of really difficult situations?
All right, on our closing 30 seconds, if your prayers could be answered, what do you hope the readers will take away from The Storm-Tossed Family?
I hope that a reader will see that he or she is not alone, that they're facing very real challenges, but Jesus is there and the church is there, and there's a real storm going on, but there's hope.
And all of God's people said,
amen.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Moore, for being available. We'll highly recommend that our listeners and our Prime Lifetime's readers pick up a copy of The Storm-Tossed Family, How the Cross Reshapes the Home. All right, everyone, get your copy today, read it, and be informed and be used of God to equip your family to navigate through these rough waters, through these troubled times, and be that fragrance of Christ to a hurting world. Thank you, Dr. Moore, for being available for today, the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Moore.
Oh,
as always,
you.
You're a blessing.
You all take care.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffel with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.